Welcome to the Boogaloo Conservatory Radio Show. Boogaloo Vic is with us today. He started dancing, well, he's been dancing since the early 60s. He's a member, or was a member of a group in high school called Three the Hard Way in 1980. Vic is a wealth source of information when it comes to Oakland's history. And so today we're going to kind of discuss things with Boogaloo Vic. Hey, Boogaloo Vic, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing? I wanted to correct that early 60s. That would have been the late 60s. I was born in 65. And the early recollection of that I personally seen of me dancing was a picture of me being posed up as a little kid about 3 years of age. It's been in my family forever. Ever since I can remember, my cousins were doing it. Mother, she danced. Matter of fact, she showed me how to do what was called the Egyptian.
What year was that?
I believe that would have probably been around 72. The reason why I say that is I went to a school called Mastic in Alameda. I was in the third grade. So whoever does the math for that, you know, they can figure that out. But I remember being in the mirror, and I had just watched a movie. I don't know if it was Jason and the Argonauts or if it was Sinbad, but I got up and started imitating the lady with the multiple arms. She had the bells in her hand, and every time she would pose, she would ding, ding, ding.
I remember that.
Right. So I don't know. It was just something that I was fascinated about every time I saw that. That made me just, you know, want to get up and try this. As I remember, and then my mother, she stepped over to me and she said, "No, son." And she got in the mirror and she showed me how to do it. But when she did it, she threw her arms up. They crossed over above their head. She started rolling her head in place. And it just changed the way that I saw how to do that movement. I've never coordinated with a boogaloo or anything like that, but...
But she called it the Egyptian.
Yeah, she called it. She told me it was called the Egyptian. And that was a move that a lot of guys that I end up seeing doing within their boogaloo before there was even a tut. So it was like you throw your hands up, cross over, and you put your head in the middle, and then you roll your neck, and you'll start squatting down. So when I did my Sinbad or my animation or my waves, I always kind of pictured that lady in the my mind's eye.
So you grew up in Alameda.
And Oakland.
And Oakland. But then you went to, I think it was Mount Eden High School?
In Hayward, California. That was my, I moved to Hayward. Let's see, I don't want to be jumping all over the place. I moved to Hayward in 77. We left West Oakland, Acorn, and moved to Hayward.
What junior high did you go to?
Rancho Royal. They ended up closing that school down, which was really wild because some of the guys, this was funny. When I moved to Hayward in 77, there was a lot of people from Oakland that moved to Hayward.
Okay.
And now that we understood that right off from the bat, we all met each other, you know, nobody really thought about, you know, discussing it. We just were kids. And we got into a lot of things, and one thing that we mainly got into was boogaloo. At that time, when I moved to Hayward in 78, they were calling it popping. Some people were calling it popping.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
And that was in, 77, not 78, I'm sorry.
Now, I'm going to share something with you. Okay, you were going to Hayward. You used to go to an underage club.
Yeah.
What was the name of that club?
Well, it was called Phase 3 at the time when I first started going. My aunt took me there, and I went there. I think I was around 12 or 13 or something like that. I ended up becoming the head rep of that club eventually after some years.
I was at that club one time.
Wow.
And someone pointed you out to me.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? That's funny because in my mind, I keep picturing, I know this guy from somewhere. I've seen his face somewhere. And I would not doubt that, Mike, you know, because you just look so familiar to me.
Well, because someone said, you know, I said, man, where are the Boogaloos out here? And someone pointed, there's a guy, his name is, I think they said Boogaloo Vic.
Well, back then they just called me Victor. See, Boogaloo, yeah. People need to understand. You just don't go around calling yourself Boogaloo. You had to be given that name.
Right.
People have to give you that name. It's an honor to be called Boogaloo. It's the top of the chain. It's the tip of the mountain. It's the umbrella term for everything that is underneath it, popping, strutting, waving, tutting, ticking. Those are the styles that follow up underneath it. But Boogaloo is the umbrella term of all of it. And this is what I've always understood all my life, like a pyramid, you know. It's the top of that pyramid, and people need to understand that. Robot even follows underneath it, to be honest with you, and people don't understand that, you know. Yeah, Robot came before, probably.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So you grew up in Alameda, then you moved to Oakland, then Hayward. So I'm curious, who in Oakland would you say influenced you the most?
Well, what happened was I was born in Oakland at Highland Hospital because it was a county hospital, and my mother moved, I think it was after my third year, moved to Oakland. We stayed on 83rd and Holly. We stayed on, I think it's 83rd in Plymouth. We lived on D Street in the early 70s, and I lived right across the street from Gaston. So okay. I saw Gaston dancing in the early years, and when I lived in Alameda, there was Newberry as an influence. And, you know, I forgot about that until he told me maybe about 6 months back. We just found out that we're family. something I forgot over the years, you know. Growing up as a kid, you know, just out there wilding, there's a whole lot of things that I forgot about. And Newberry, I grew up with Newberry as a kid. There was a family called the Bullockses, and he used to hang out with them. And they hung with my cousins. And this is in the early, like, 70s. And my cousin Timothy and Renee, brother and sister, they were a Boogaloo duo. And they used to, man, they were just like my earliest influences. My cousin Renee, she was just so monstrous with the robot and the poles. She was like 10 times as good as Yarnell's. I believe that was Yarnell's. Yeah. Chills from Chills and Yarnell.
You know, you're just girl, talking about posing or hard posing?
Posing, robot. I mean, she had that look in her eyes. And then she had a big afro, or she would wear afro puffs. And so every time she would hit those afro puffs or that afro would move, and I always was mesmerized by it. I mean, I was just so in awe of this dance art form. I couldn't go throughout a day without thinking about it. I'll be at school, be on thinking about it. I'll be at home practicing as a little kid. I mean, I was just so stuck on it. But those were some of my earliest influences. And then to see Chuck and the Messengers on the Gong Show. I was living in Hayward at that time. And, I mean, it was so exciting that it was like a parade pretty much like in Oakland because everybody was so pumped up that it stretched all the way to Hayward. All these people that knew the Messengers in Hayward. So we were juiced about that. I grew up with these legends, the stories of legends, the Resurgence, Newberry, Monk, there was Tony Newsom.
You ever remember any like epic battles between some of these people?
Well, in Oakland, when I lived in Oakland, West Oakland, there was an event that come around May. I think it was like May 6th. It was a May Day festival. They give it in West Oakland, East Oakland, different parts. And kids would get together and they would start dancing. So when I was in, I believe it was the fifth grade, I was going to Lafayette in West Oakland. We had a festival out there. Those guys were out there just getting it, man. It was just so monstrous. Also, I want to say when I lived in Alameda, I went to a school. This is funny. It was called Hate School. And we had dances and we had battles. And you're talking about in the age of disco. Yeah, I boogalooed in the age of disco to disco music. I can tell you even some of my favorite songs that I dance to. People are shocked when I tell them that. I disco dance and boogaloo. So I did it for my school as not a mascot, but I represented my school. And they would take us to different schools in Alameda. and we would battle these cats, and I was just known to be the best.
So, you know, I can remember you told me a while back that you knew some people from Berkeley. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I lived in Saliandro, I met a bunch of kids that were from Berkeley, and they would always, these kids, they would find me, from, they would live in other cities and go to city to wherever I'm at and hang out with me and learn, you know, by just hanging out, simply hanging out, they would learn from me. And it was Anthony Allen. He was in a group called Christian. They were first band to sign with Rockefeller Records. He danced with me in the early 80s, along with a bunch of other cats, Diamond D. I mean, people from other crews would join me. And I would do battles. We did some talent shows. There was a talent show in Pittsburgh that I recall.
What's your connection with Damon Frost?
Oh, okay. So Damon Frost, he's one of the cats from Berkeley, San Francisco area. The first time I met Damon, we battled maybe for about an hour. I met him at a DJ battle in San Francisco, and I think that was actually 80 or 81. And what happened was I had went to Walgreens, bought a sweatsuit, and the sweatsuit was blue and white. And I was on a double date. I go to this club with this young lady and her sister and her sister's date, and we're sitting at the table, and we look over, and these guys are starting to, you know, bust some moves. But as I noticed, they're all in like a red and white sweatsuit, made the same as my blue and white. So as I look over past them, I can see the guys that they're battling are wearing the blue and white sweatsuit. I'm like, whoa. And so it was just really funny. So I got up and I walked over there, and I just started dancing. So I just cleared the room. Next thing you know, this guy steps out, and he's just huge, tall. And he comes at me with these, you know, just mind-blowing moves, stuff that I've never, ever seen before. Now, the difference between Damien Frost and I were his moves were more technical, where I'm more of a dancer. So his moves were more concentrated in the tricks. And these are things that we started learning in the late 80s to be able to do illusions and tricks and things of that nature. And Damien Frost eventually ended up picking a lot of my stuff up. We hung out, we did battles together, went to the Fresh Festival, battled at the Fresh Festival. As far as this legend was going around for a long time, Boogaloo Dana, Boogaloo Dana, Boogaloo Dana. We always heard these stories about the incredible shrinking man and all the incredible things that he did, and I never met Dana for a long time, and I always imagined what he was like and things that he would do, and how did he do them. And, you know, we were into things that teenagers were into back in them days, so we would get in a certain zone and start trying to imitate what we thought Dana would do, or what I saw cats like Damon, how they were. And when I started battling these cats, you know, I would start making these illusions up.
Right.
You know,
right.
We always grew up with these illusions, you know, like Mimas. The mimes were due in the box, going down the escalator, holding on to the rope, sitting at the bar, those type of things, walking the dog. Yeah. So these are illusions and they're tricks. And so we got more in detail into our tricks and illusions.
Right.
The idea is that mechanical device, or AKA Black Messengers, the style that they started and put out with the monstrous hits and poses and all that, that stuff right there is what basically drove me to mix the illusions and that hard hitting and pose into the animation and all the stuff that I did back in the early 80s.
The 80s, you know, when the music kind of changed,
yeah.
Disco really started dying out. The funk era, I don't know where the funk era went, but
well, it's kind of like it was kind of like part R&B funk in the mid 70s kind of
right.
And then it became disco, and then it came back. The funk came back in a sort of sense.
Well, rap took over too.
Yeah, rap also, the simple rap, the basic rap that we would understand it to be now, the old school OG style. But now, people need to understand, in the early 70s, and this is what they need to understand, if you want to learn your history, you want to get somewhere, you have to understand where you're coming from. In the early days, these cats were hitting on the one. That's what James Brown put out on us. He put out on us to be on the one. The beats were different. And as you travel through time, you'll notice that the beats, syncopation and all that, it all changed. That I think that was a downbeat, right? The one. So now people are more on an up-tempo. Tempos are more faster. So it changes, and that's evolution. My golden secret has been, if anybody was ever asked me, this is my advice. Dance to what's being played on the radio now. You don't necessarily have to dance to what the words are. You can find instrumentals, but dance to what's being played on the radio now. If you stay stagnated, in my opinion, with that old music, that's all nice and glorious or whatever, but you're going to be stagnant and stuck on that. There's nothing wrong to honor the past and the people that gave it to me. I do it all the time whenever I give a performance. But you want to stay with today's time. You want to stay evolving. You want to stay current. Dance off of what's being played on the radio now.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. That's one of the reasons why I like the turfing events.
Exactly. Now, see, I believe this with the turfers. They've involved like another two generations, it seems. So it's a lot more advanced. I can really respect it now. And they've mixed other styles within it. But bottom line, it's like you have to come home is what it is, you know, 360 degrees. Because
that whole turfing community, what's so vibrant about it is it kind of reminds me of the early 70s. It's like the Wild Wild West again. People just coming out from left field and just taking people on and winning. And it's like the
energy. All comes from Boogaloo.
Yeah.
It all comes from Boogaloo. The turfing, the flexing, the bone breaking, all that, those are Boogaloo moves. That's a Boogaloo mentality, Boogaloo style. There's no two ways about it. It wasn't one person that made up Boogaloo. It was a community of people that made Boogaloo, and it came out of Oakland. But, you know, let me share this also. I go down to San Jose, and for the first time, I'm getting my appreciation of watching breaking, because it was been incorporated into the popping. And these guys were actually doing a good job of doing it. And that was the Sonic Wavers. And there was some friends of mine. Like I said, I knew this guy, Chaz Hayes. He's Z40's manager, Nick Cannon's manager. He was the first person that took me to San Jose to show me all these guys. At Independence High School, we went to an area where, like at lunchtime, other schools would come, people from other cities would come, and they would all gather in this area, the B quadrants, at an Independence High School.
What year was that?
81, 82.
Okay.
Okay. So back then, there was what is known as Playboy Rob now. We just knew him as Rob. The Puppetrons, the Sonic Wavers, Just Us, Snap Along. These guys, I ended up eventually becoming welcome into their community, and I soaked up a lot of their style, which was very fluent, swag. Because when I met the Sonic Wavers, you would have Eric. He was like the monstrous version of popping, and you had Anthony. He was like the ladies' man. You know, he was more...
Anthony, you know, he's still around, right?
Yeah, Anthony is still around. To get him to dance is another thing. I don't know. We all try to get him, but I'm sure eventually he'll come back. I mean, that guy was sick. But you know, at the same time, there was other cats in other cities. Like you go to Palo Alto, they called it strutting, and they called it popping, and they called it boogaloo, you know. Yeah. So
there's also the church's chicken competitions, as I recall.
Right, which I want to say that also in the 80s, not only did I have one of the nicest and largest competitions, it was every Thursday we gave a little competition at the club during the daytime. It was called the Pop Lock Boogaloo Dance Contest. And this was in 81, 82, somewhere around there. But I also, it was around 83, 84, that we had the first hip-hop magazine ever in existence, which had breakers and poppers and rappers. And we were highly respected all around. We did a lot of shows, concerts, events, and Channel 48 Church's Chicken was one of the events that we participated in. I got another story I want to share too also.
Okay.
But these people like me battling Melvin, Fantastic Melvin at UC Berkeley. Melvin was supposedly the number one in the Bay Area, which I was told that I was. After I battled Melvin, I was definitely known as the number one cat. But the thing is, he was a pupil of Boogaloo Dana, and so was Damien Frost. I ended up battling both of them, and one became my best friend, and one becomes my biggest enemy, and that was Melvin, and Damon became my best friend. But I also want to share the story. So I also brought Blue Shrimp, Pop and Pete, Sugar Pop, all these guys from the movie Breaking and some from the movie B Street, down to Fremont to Phase 3. It was a chance and opportunity for these guys to dance again, meet, greet. And this is what I thought I would do and hook this up and put them all under one roof. And so a lot of people met each other, formed good relationships. Some of them weren't so good. But this was the beginning of a lot of what we're dealing with today.
About what year was that?
That was in 83,
okay.
For sure. The story is like a book.
How many people are still around that not only participated but remember? You might find them as a janitor at a school or, working at a rec center.
Right.
All the William brothers. I think Larry's still around from what I've been told. I don't know if you know Frosty.
Around. You know, when I grew up in Oakland and I was living in Oakland, we lived on Asherton Boulevard in Brookville. Cats like Shop. I remember him from back in the day. I remember the Ben James dude. There's a lot of cats that I remember when I hear their names or when I see them dance. I love to see Shop when he breaks down and gets on all, we called it all fours. Both hands in your feet and you're walking across the stage like a dog or some kind of animal or whatever. Seeing him do that, man, I mean, it brings joy to my heart. Watching Boogaloo Dan with the classic style that he has, man, it brings joy to my heart. I mean, I'm crying tears from the inside out. I mean, it takes you back, and it takes you back to a moment of what was you doing right then and there. You know, it's like you can taste it, you can smell it, you can hear it, and you can just feel it. And
Boogaloo Dan like Frosty. Is really good. Yeah, both Frosty, Boogaloo Dan. They have that certain something that kind of embodies what Boogaloo was. You know, it's great watching them dance.
They represent the cats that were good then. Yeah. It wasn't just not. I mean, we had so many of them. It was
John Murphy.
John Murphy. Oh wow! I mean, I used to hear that name so much, and then to finally turn around and meet him, you know, after all this time, you know. But I'll just never forget the Messengers, our mechanical device, on the Gong Show, the year they went on. I mean, it was just monsters. If we had VCR then, I probably would have wore the tape out, rewinding it, playing it over and over again, because it was just like, man, did you see that? I even saw them when they were on the Rah Rah Show, you know? And so Soul Train comes about, you know, you wait every week and you run to the TV and you're always looking through the crowd to find out who's hitting. Who's getting down? And that was just the sickness of it. I mean, if it was like trading cards right now of of snapshots of the past, of times where people did whatever they did. Man, I mean, that would be my collection. I would have Robot Prince on Solid Gold and Soul Train. I would have Chuck and them on the Gong Show. I would have Granny from the Gong Show. You know, I would have all these cards, you know, and that would be something I would be happy with going to my grave with.
Right.
Well, you know.
Yeah, on that note, we're running out of time here. So I'd kind of like to end this. I would glad to. I'll tell you. Let's continue this conversation.
Yeah, we can do definitely a part two. I would enjoy it.
We will definitely do a part two. And but right now we gotta. I know we're kind of over our time limit. So this is. Can I say your full name?
Yeah.
Okay. This is Victor Soros, a.k.a. Boogaloo Vic, and this is the Boogaloo Conservatory radio show, and this is your host, Mr. Atomic, and I'm going to end it here. Do you have any shout-outs?
I'd like to give a shout-out to Los Angeles. I'd like to give a shout-out to the Messengers and all my dudes in Oakland East, from Oakland, even in Hayward, the cats that are pass on. I like to say, you know, I miss you, Wavo. Rest in peace.
Don't forget Bopatron.
Well, we had just recently passed away.
Right.
This Bop and Deuce. But, you know, personally, I've had both my brother personally and my wife's brother pass away, which my wife's brother was a big supporter. It was because of him that I returned, and also for the mere, not the mere fact, but Boogaloo Dana, I want to shout out to him, and Playboy Brian, Money B and Playboy Inc. These three individuals, Dana, Money B, and my brother-in-law, were the three people that were instrumental on bringing back 2005. I went to the B-Boy Summit and represented in 2006, and I'm still on it right now. I'm trying to lose this weight so I come back. I have four ruptured discs, so I really can't really dance, but I still get out a little something I can show people, and hopefully I can share, and maybe they can learn some things off of me. I got a wealth of information, beautiful stories, sad stories, and even stories that are bitter, you know.
Right.
But it's all beautiful under the art form that we know as Boogaloo. So.
All right, Vic. Well, this has been, I'm glad I got a hold of you. I'm glad we had this conversation, and we'll definitely do a part two. But right now, we're going to end it. This is the Boogaloo Conservatory Radio Show. This is Mr. Atomic signing off. I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.